Good morning, everyone. This is Randy Christman, Chairman of North Dakota Public Service Commission. It is 3 o'clock on July 12th, 2017. This is our regular scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, although a regular scheduled meeting at an irregular time. We normally start at 10, and this afternoon we needed to move it back a little bit. I call this meeting to order, and the opening comments that I have regard a meeting I was at a little bit on Monday and then all day yesterday of the North Dakota Association of Telecommunications Cooperatives, an old group that I used to be a part of and even got to be president of for a couple years. But fun getting with them and interesting in 4.5 years how much telecommunications technology and planning has passed me by already in just that short of time, how they're evolving and moving forward. And so many of the companies have already completed fiber to the home projects. Others have gotten a long ways farther than what they were when I left. Just doing tremendous work and providing high-speed internet as well as regular old telephone service to a lot of people around the state and at an affordable rate and really doing some great work. They have certainly obstacles coming ahead of them, competition and less assistance than what they've gotten in the past, but they're upbeat and continuing to do a good job. Commissioner Crashes.
Good afternoon. I don't have a whole lot to add other than had the opportunity to be out there as well at the same conference, not quite as long, but able to make a stop out there. And would just echo Randy's comments and just the importance of continuing to expand broadband access in the rural communities and the positive impact that has on both business and just consumers as well. But yeah, it was a great meeting, and one thing that it's just so incredibly dry out there. The Magpie fire was still burning to the north, and just underscores not only to be safe when it comes to digging because it's that time of the year, but also in terms of just the fire risk out there is tremendous. But great meeting, great group of people.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, good afternoon. I am always amazed when I sit down with that telco group, how advanced North Dakota is. We're a rural state, and I haven't seen the latest reports, but I think our companies out there serving the rural areas have done the best job that I can see in the country of making use of the programs that exist to expand and to get the broadband out to rural areas. I know some of those small companies have got fiber to the home in their entire service area. Not to say the job is all done, but they have done a really heck of a job, and it's fun to be there to see that the meetings are not fluff. I mean, some of those sessions, I felt like I wanted an acronym sheet and a set of definitions just so I could follow the speakers to understand all the various high-tech different programs that they're talking about and all the issues that they're dealing with. So we're very fortunate in North Dakota to have very progressive rural telephone co-ops serving throughout our state, and it's really keeps North Dakota competitive in a global market. So back from that and leaving again this next week for NARUC, the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. Del Wetzel asked me what that stood for on my very first press conference. And I actually got it wrong. But I know what it is now, and it still doesn't make sense. But anyway, NARUC meeting, their summer meeting is coming up, and I'm looking forward to participating in that. I serve on the Natural Gas Committee. I'm a co-chair of the Natural Gas Committee, and we're going to be, and I just recently got appointed to a Natural Gas Access and Expansion Task Force. It's one of the focus points of the organization as a whole nationwide to really talk about what initiatives are out there to help improve natural gas access to rural areas and unserved areas. It's been something that I've been interested in North Dakota for the last, for my entire time here. And I'm excited to get involved with it on a more national scale through that task force and see what other kinds of efforts can materialize as a result of that. So our first meeting of that task force will take place during NARUC, and we will also have a discussion, a panel discussion during the meeting itself focused on that subject and bringing some different experts in from all over the country. Also during NARUC, we'll be meeting with the group working on the white paper on infrastructure development and lessons learned from my perspective, what we learned in North Dakota from Dakota Access, and working with others on what was learned, what can be learned from other states as we see infrastructure projects continue to come under a lot of scrutiny, which is right and good to have them come under scrutiny and have them be built and constructed as well as possible for the public interest. But we also want to make sure that the permitting process is maintained and that these companies can move forward with developing this infrastructure that we all need for the reliable energy future that we all desire and depend on. So that group will meet as well during NARUC, and then just looking forward to a lot of good discussions through the GAS committee on a wide variety of issues in terms of the predictability of the natural gas market, the reliability of it, where things are going. There's just a lot of really good information and materials that we can glean through this national conference, and I'm looking forward to 3 days to participate in that. So that's where I'll be next week. You two are both going or not?
I am.
Absolutely.
Okay, excellent. All right, that's it for me. Thanks.
I will take liberty to just add one more thing on the telcos. One thing that they often do not get credit for, because I think a lot of people are aware of the great job they've done of phone service, but many of them also partnered up with some of the major cell phone companies in the 90s and the first decade of the 2000s, provided a lot of the capital that it took to build out our cell phone network in North Dakota and continue to carry those calls from cell phone tower to its ultimate destination to another tower. So played a key role not only in your local phone service and internet service, but also in cellular.
Well, and now, if I might add, Mr. Chairman, the next step beyond the cell phones is just the broadband, which will take care of everything and probably take away the phones in the future. So really such an evolving industry and such a challenge for these rural telephone co-ops to be able to figure out and make it work for their customers.
It's an interesting industry. Okay, we'll move to the consent calendar, and items 1 through 10 of the consent calendar have been placed on the regular agenda, so that really leaves just the minutes and two items, BK11 and BK12, on the consent calendar, and I move adoption of the items on the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Moving to the regular agenda, RC1, I move the Commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Budget Prepay Incorporated, designated eligible carrier, cancellation/application, case number PU-17-175.
Second.
On December 12th of 2012, doesn't that seem like a long time ago, Julie? But 3 weeks before us two arrived, the Commission issued an order designating Budget Prepay Incorporated as an eligible telecommunications carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers in North Dakota. On April 26th of this year, we received Budget's application to relinquish the ETC designation and to discontinue the provision of wireless services. On May 10th, we issued a notice of opportunity for comment. No comments have been received. Under federal law, this commission shall permit a carrier to relinquish its ETC designation for an area served by more than one eligible telecommunications carrier prior to permitting a carrier to cease providing service. We need to require the remaining carrier or carriers to ensure that all customers served by the relinquishing carrier will continue to be served. We have received, we've reviewed the documents in this proceeding and find that it has not been shown that customers served by this relinquishing carrier will not continue to be served by the remaining carrier or carriers, and budget states that they actually have less than 40 subscribers in North Dakota. So everything seems in order, and I believe we should proceed to let them relinquish their status.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-17-275, canceling warehouse license number 1199 issued to Buffalo Grain Company, LLC at Tower City, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Tower City is discontinued.
Second.
On June 16th, we received a request to discontinue business from Buffalo Grain Company for its warehouse at Tower City. Buffalo Grain notified us they are no longer doing business. The warehouse is empty, and there are no outstanding storage obligations. And staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'll point out, of course, everybody knows that Tower City is famous for being the hosting the North Dakota state horse pull, and their great pies and baked goods. But a little interesting thing that I found out, Tower City is not named after any TV tower or anything like that down there. It's named after Charlemagne Tower, who was a railroad company official, an attorney who put together a lot of land holdings in his workings with the railroads, and his father was a New York state legislator, but Charlemagne was a Civil War hero. His son ended up being ambassador to the Russian Empire later on. And Tower City, enough about the founder of it, Tower City, before any town named Grand Forks even had a university, no, I think it was, I don't know which it was before, either before NDSU or UND, Tower City had a university. They had worked with the Baptists who wanted to form a university, and it got started, but enrollment wasn't very good, and Mr. Tower didn't come through with all the money that had been promised him by his agent, and it fell through in the 1880s. So we once had Tower University at Tower City, North Dakota.
Interesting.
I was not able to confirm the rumor that they really failed because of their lack of a good football or hockey team. But.
Are you ever going to reveal your source material for all this trivia?
Hazen High School Civics and other sources.
Is there any other further discussion? Then see none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my agenda. Commissioner Crashes.
Second.
Okay, on March 31st, 2017, Otter Tail Power Company filed an application for approval of its 2017-2018 environmental cost recovery rider rates. On April 26, 2017, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. A deadline of June 7th, 2017 was set for filing comments and requests for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were received. On June 15th, 2017, Commission staff filed a memorandum in support of Otter Tail Power's filing. And on June 27th, 2017, the Commission held an informal hearing on Otter Tail Power's request. This filing was Otter Tail Power's fourth annual update to its ECR rider, and the ECR rider was first approved by the Commission order, or by Commission order, on December 28th, 2013. The annual update includes continued recovery for the environmental upgrades to Otter Tail Power's Hoot Lake plant, the Big Stone plant that Otter Tail Power owns jointly with Northwestern Energy and MDU, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, and the true-up to forecasted and actual expenses and revenue from the currently effective rates that became effective on July 1st, 2016. The amount of the true-up reduced the revenue requirement by just under $90,000. And in a nutshell, the currently effective rate is 7.904% added to each customer's bill. And the proposed rate is 7.633% to each customer's bill, a decrease to the revenue requirement of $440,000. And what that equates to essentially is 25 cents a month for the average consumer, average residential consumer, consuming 1,000 kilowatt hours. And in that case, they will see a monthly decrease of 25 cents or $3 per year. On March 31st, 2017, proposed rate adjustments complies with the tariff and the incurred and projected costs for Otter Tail Power's environmental project are reasonable and prudent.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and secondly on my agenda, I move the Commission close Public Service Commission Denbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-243, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-244, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-245, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-246, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-249, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-250, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-251, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-252, Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-253, and Public Service Commission Danbury Onshore LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-16-254.
Second.
All right. And the 10 cases mentioned, and they were pooled into one. I want to make some comments on that. These 10 cases are the result of allegations made by Ernst Trenching that Danbury Onshore did not locate and mark their underground facilities as required by North Dakota Century Code Chapter 49-23. Over the course of more than the past year, staff has thoroughly investigated the complaint, which was made on June 3, 2016. And during the course of the investigation, multiple attempts were made to get more concrete information from those involved, including Ernst Trenching, Danbury, Cattermas Lee and Jackson, and Consolidated Telecom. During the review, staff has been unable to find sufficient evidence and witnesses to prove a violation has occurred in any of these cases. And these cases bring to mind one of the challenges currently facing our state. And during the last boom in the 70s and 80s, many facilities were placed underground at a time that we did not have standardized laws, standardized location laws or procedures. Many of the facilities were constructed as well with polyethylene plastic pipe that is not locatable with traditional locate technology. In other words, the tracer wire was not used at that particular time. and are required to be used. In 1996, when our one-call law was enacted, it was not clear what the locate requirements were for such underground facilities. And it wasn't until an update to that law in 2013 that it was made clear that the only facilities not required to be locatable are water lines installed prior to August 1st, 2013. So now, if a line like that was installed today, it would be buried in the trench with a tracer wire to allow for quick and easy location. With all of that in mind, though, it's important to remember that even if it's difficult to locate the line or expensive in some cases to manually dig and find where those lines are, it is the responsibility for every underground facility owner to be able to locate their facilities when requested to do so by a one-call ticket. If they are unable to do so, they would, in fact, be in violation of the law and would be held accountable. These cases are unfortunate because when Consolidated Telecom, in this instance, was looking to expand its broadband network and lay fiber optic cable, the contractor that they had involved actually left the job just because of the difficulties in not knowing where the gas lines were. But again, after visiting with staff many times and knowing the work that they have done over the past 13 months, we do need sufficient evidence in terms of moving forward with the case. And we were unable to obtain witnesses or sufficient evidence to support the 10 different complaints that I mentioned that were actually tied to three different tickets. So I support, again, even though it's unfortunate that this has slowed down providing fiber optic cable in areas that certainly need it. And, again, this is a situation that is a result of pipelines going in the past without the tracer wire and other means of locating them. We still have to have sufficient evidence to be able to move forward on this. And finding a lack of sufficient evidence, I do support the motion to dismiss the 10 cases discussed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
To clarify for people who are listening or watching and keeping score, the 10 items that you proposed to close with this motion were the 10 items that were previously listed as separate agenda items on the consent calendar, correct?
Correct. We consolidated in an attempt to expedite the same exact conversation that would occur on an individual basis.
Very good. I'm glad you put it on the regular agenda and explained what is going on here.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That completes your...
I have a complaint. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
I don't have any. Do I?
I think so.
Oh, that was in consent. That's consent. We already passed that. CJF1. Am I correct, Sarah? Yeah, that was already passed.
Well, then,
sorry.
I kind of stated my motion to, I said two items that were listed as BK11 and BK12. Do we need to, I'm looking at legal counsel here. Should I restate that, or what should we do?
When he was passing the consent agenda is what he's referring
yes,
to.
I don't remember the exact words.
I had said that what was after taking those first 10, BK1 through 10 off, what would be left would be the minutes and two items, BK11 and BK12.
I could certainly read
would
those now.
Make this motion or fix the consent motion.
If you don't mind, could we just put it on the regular agenda?
And sure, but I. I just have JF1, so it's one item.
right? I have it here.
You have it?
Yep. Okay.
And it was pretty...
Sure. Simple. Yeah, no, and I...
belonged on the consent calendar, but...
That's where I thought it was going. But that's fine, because it's actually an interesting thing to talk about anyway. So we'll bring it up here. I moved the... Can I get the copy of that letter, though? I didn't print that out here, just this piece. Thanks, Randy. I move the commission approve Oliver Wynn 3 LLC's request to revise its tree and shrub mitigation plan filed July 11th, 2017, changing the planting date to spring-summer 2018 in Oliver Wynn 3 LLC 230 kV transmission line, Oliver and Morton siting application case number PU-16-122, and Oliver Wynn 3 LLC Oliver 3 Wind Energy Center Oliver and Morton siting application case number PU-16-123.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. So this was a request from the company to basically refrain from planting their trees for the tree and shrub mitigation plan until next year because of the drought for both the transmission line and the wind farm that they are developing or have developed out there north of Mandan and in Oliver County largely. And I think that... as staff ran it by me, I thought it was a good idea to go ahead and do that. They were concerned that there would be a low survivability of the trees and shrubs that they did plant this year just because of the lack of rain and the drought conditions, and so it would make more sense to plant at the beginning of the season next year when hopefully we will be getting more rain. So I think this is a sensible approach.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I agree. We can't hardly get weeds to grow this year. So,
all the thistle is growing big.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Sorry again about that snafu and putting you on the spot suddenly. That concludes our regular agenda. We will... take some questions... We will stand in recess and then take some questions from the press, after which we'll take a short break and then come back for the administrative portion of the meeting. We are in recess.
All right, Commissioner Fedorchuk, what is their... can you briefly describe what their shrub mitigation plan is? Or?
Well, as with all of our... projects, there's a two-for-one replacement of all the trees and shrubs that are removed during construction, and I don't have the details of the report to know how many they actually removed. In wind generation facilities, typically not a lot of trees are removed because most of the wind towers go on the top of hills, and that's not where you find a lot of trees in North Dakota. but the transmission line, there could have been a fair number removed for the transmission line, so Sarah will run and get the actual count, but it's a two-for-one replacement typically, and they will be waiting until next spring to begin replanting the spring-summer of 2018.
And they're typically not required to put them on the same spot, or even if a particular landowner just doesn't want them replaced there, they can typically plant them on another landowner's property as well.
Right. They can't usually put them on the same spot because there's often construction or, you know, something else there. But so they work with the landowners and determine where best to put them. And as Randy said, there's been a lot of success stories for the commission allowing the companies to still replace them on a two-to-one basis. But if the landowner doesn't want any of them any place on his property, then they work with some conservation group or they might work with a local park or find another location for the trees and shrubs to be planted. So the net count of trees and shrubs as a result of energy development in North Dakota won't be significantly different than it would have been without the energy development.
Yeah, one thing that's occurred to me as I've looked at that, just as a side comment, as you progress from the eastern part of the state to the western part of the state, the amount of rainfall decreases as well, and the soil tends to be lighter in the west. And I've often wondered if that 2-to-1 ratio is a good fit in the east, but if it were to graduate to a 3-to-1 ratio or even possibly 4-to-1 in the extreme western part, even in a normal year, I've planted saplings out there and the survival rate is challenging. It's really tough to get them to go if you plant and then it dries up. But just a thought I think would bear investigation, because the survival rate I think does ratchet down somewhat as you move west.
That's a good point, and we should definitely look into that as we proceed. It is also important to note, though, that the commission has a 75% survival rate kind of built in,
right,
and so they monitor that and come back and forth. And we have required companies, if they can't reach that, to go back and plant more until they get to that point. And it's not unheard of, but pretty uncommon where they can't get to that point at some point. But if they absolutely can't, some places you just can't regrow trees and shrubs. Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, in western North Dakota, it's hard. And that's why we have the tree and shrub mitigation plan to begin with, is to try to minimize the amount of unnecessary removal of trees and shrubs that occurs during construction, and to hold the companies responsible for replacing that resource, which is great for the environment and great for the birds and the wildlife. So it's a balance, but that's something that we can definitely, I think, work on and look at. And Sarah is our tree and shrub mitigation plan guru and monitors them and looks at all the reports that come in. And so she can, as we proceed, offer her 2 cents on the 2-to-1 versus 3-to-1 or whatever we ultimately settle on. Oh, I will say, with this new report, the company is currently planning to plant 22 trees and 204 shrubs. Let's see, 3 trees and 292 shrubs are inventoried for a total of 295 trees and shrubs. Blah, blah, blah. So the 179 shrubs that are not replanted should be inventoried in 75%. So why are they not replanting? This doesn't sound like a 2-to-1, Sarah.
If the rootstock
is
remaining, then the rootstock should regenerate. So a bunch of the shrubs were... there's supposedly rootstock that was saved. And so we have asked, just to ensure that we do get good survivability, that 75% of the existing rootstock that's being put back in place survives, which that might be problematic, too, because of the drought.
So, again, that's another interesting little piece of science that we do try to work with the companies to recognize that if they're saving that in a rootstock, and shrubs are hard to get to regrow anyway, from planting standpoint, that they can attempt to salvage the rootstock and get regrowth from that. And we monitor that as well.
Any other questions? John?
Well, when they put the university in at Tower City, did they build the buildings out of ivory so they could call it an ivory tower?
It's weird.
Had they'd probably still be in existence today, because that's a very good idea. Okay, we will reconvene at 3:40 on that clock.